Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live, and as always, you're invited to join us. 603-283-6160 is the phone number to do that. That's 603-283-6160. And with you tonight, it's Aria.
And Angie.
And, man, a lot to talk about today. Most of it kind of disheartening. Record job openings and many still unemployed. Evidently, there are more job openings than there are unemployed.
That is correct. I read a headline that there were 11 million job openings in the U.S. and 9 million people unemployed.
It doesn't make any sense. In other news, Hawaii is finally implementing a vaccine pass. We saw that coming. Biden is planning a total financial surveillance apparatus. And good news, Britney Spears' lawyer claims vindication as her father is moving to end the conservatorship. All of that and more, plus North Carolina upset about a beer label and LAPD being instructed to monitor people's social media when they pull them over, which is not good for people who like freedom of speech.
Right. It's completely crazy to think they're going to be able to look through your personal life as soon as they pull you over on the side of the road.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, they can, I mean, a cop can look up anyone's Facebook, I guess, if they want, but
To be instructed and to have to write down the usernames and the Instagram name and the Twitter name is kind of scary.
It gets into all of that?
Yes.
Wow, okay. We're going to talk about that, but I want to start with Biden's total financial surveillance apparatus. Imagine living in a world where every one of your non-cash financial transactions, a restaurant meal, a Venmo transfer to a friend, maybe some Bitcoin bought on the dips, was automatically reported to a beefed-up, audit-hungry IRS. It's already mostly possible.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, doesn't that happen anyway?
That's kind of the issue with digital transactions, is that there's always a paper trail.
There's someone
or
watching.
Or a digital trail.
Yeah.
That dystopia will become a reality if President Joe Biden gets his way. Biden, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who we're going to talk about later, she's predicting that the U.S. will default on the national debt next month. And of course, that's not surprising. It won't be the first time that that happens. And key Capitol Hill allies like Elizabeth Warren are pushing a vast intrusive financial surveillance system in the name of closing the, quote, tax gap. But don't worry. There's nothing to fear if you've got nothing to hide.
They're going to make something up, even if you have nothing to hide.
Oh, yeah. They always do. And it doesn't matter. You know, wanting privacy doesn't mean you necessarily have something to hide. It just means you want privacy.
Exactly. I don't want anyone knowing I'm going to the adult store to buy my goodies. And,
right.
You know, why do they need to know my personal business?
Yeah, I would. You know, any of these people who say, well, you shouldn't need privacy if you don't have anything to hide. Okay, are you having sex with the curtains open then?
No, absolutely not.
And it's not because you're doing anything illegal. It's because you want privacy.
Yes, exactly.
For already compliant taxpayers, the only effect of this regime is to provide easy access to summary information on financial accounts and to decrease the likelihood of costly, quote, no-fault examinations, said the Treasury Department. And I don't even know what that means. It's a nakedly authoritarian document called The American Families Plan Tax Compliant Agenda. But for non-compliant taxpayers, the department continues, this regime would encourage voluntary compliance as evaders realize that the risk of evasion being detected has risen noticeably. I don't know what they're talking about. I really hope this article actually explains what they're trying to do. The administration's proposed comprehensive financial account reporting regime would dramatically increase the types of financial institutions and transactions exposed to the Fed's prying eyes. Well, realistically, again, all transactions that are digital are exposed to the Fed's prying eyes.
Yeah, they're going to watch you.
It's just a matter of whether or not they want to look into you.
Mm-hmm.
All business and personal accounts from financial institutions, including bank loan and investment accounts, would be forced to report gross inflows and outflows to the IRS. And not just bank accounts. The dragnet would also include PayPal, settlement companies, and crypto asset exchanges for starters. So presumably Venmo, Cash App, and all of the others would be required to report gross inflows and outflows to the IRS under this Biden administration plan.
I assume that they already did that.
I would assume so as well. The new domestic surveillance program, which requires congressional approval, is one prong of a tripartite. I've never seen that word before. Strategy for transforming the entire global financial system into a harmonious, haven-free collection funnel to the IRS. The second part, which has taken up the bulk of Biden's multilateral diplomacy thus far, is getting the industrialized world to agree on a global minimum corporate tax of 15%, while setting up a system to prevent multinational companies from registering their profits in the lowest tax jurisdiction. Well, that's a bad idea. The existence of low tax jurisdictions, that helps those places attract multinational companies to put their headquarters there and right. give them money. That's why they exist. But obviously, they want more money. The Biden administration does. So they want a global minimum corporate tax of 15% so that no one can undercut them.
They want 15% of like businesses?
Yes. They want corporations to be taxed at 15% at minimum.
That's absolutely insane.
Yeah. And they want that to be global, like every country on earth.
There's going to be so many companies closing down.
I don't know. Every country on earth certainly wouldn't agree to it. And it would only take like one country to be like, no, we're not doing that. We're going to offer a 1% tax rate to become the corporate headquarter of the world. So it's a bad plan. Cutting corporate taxes is a self-defeating competition, Yellen said in April, and neither President Biden nor I are interested in participating in it anymore. We want to change the game. In July, representatives from 130 countries agreed in principle to a worldwide minimum corporate tax. Yes, but that's not all countries, and if you have even one that doesn't agree to it offering lower taxes, then your plan doesn't work. You just chase corporations out of the United States and out of these 130 countries and into the ones that did not agree to it. We have a chance now to build a global and domestic tax system, Yellen crowed. The race to the bottom is one step closer to coming to an end. This agreement still has a significant obstacle to overcome, namely the legislatures of 130 countries, including the U.S. Congress. I don't think the United States Congress will be on board with this.
I hope not.
I hope not, too. But Yellen has some cause to be cocky because the third prong of Washington's strategy has already been constructed. In 2009, Barack Obama promised to generate $210 billion in new tax revenue over 10 years by cracking down on overseas tax loopholes. While the corporate tax element of the plan was quickly killed, the individual component remained in the form of the 2010 Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. Man, they spend a lot of money trying to get people to comply with a tax system that is incomprehensible and cannot be complied with.
Right. If they didn't spend that money, then they wouldn't need to enforce it so much. They wouldn't be broke.
That's true. And if it wasn't 80,000 pages, it probably wouldn't have so many loopholes or however many it
right.
is. It's many tens of thousands of pages, the tax code in the United States.
How quickly do they expect them to read that?
Well, even if someone could read all of that, they wouldn't be able to make sense of it.
No.
And in 80,000 pages, there's going to be all sorts of loopholes and contradictions. And it's insanity to think that I keep saying 80,000. I don't know exactly how many it is, but it's many tens of thousands of pages. It's impossible. There was a study done a number of years ago where they gave 10 different accountants the same information.
Yeah.
To see what they were supposed to pay in taxes. And all 10 accountants came up with different results.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, because
and they have a degree.
Yeah. And it's because the tax code is incomprehensible. Even the IRS doesn't understand the tax code. Built on a foundation of American exceptionalism, the U.S. is one of only two countries that tax citizens living abroad. I'm curious now who the other is. The FATCA imposed onerous new annual reporting requirements on Americans with more than $10,000 in overseas financial institutions. The law brazenly threatened international banks if they didn't rat out their U.S. clients to the IRS. And the results were predictable. Expatriates were locked out of banking services, record numbers of mostly middle-class Americans renounced their U.S. citizenship, and IRS collections went essentially unchanged. Not surprising there, we're going to continue talking about the Biden administration's plan to monitor all digital transactions. 603-283-6160 if you want to join us. That's 603-283-6160. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. As always, you're invited to join us. 603-283-6160 if you want to do that. That's 603-283-6160. And with you tonight, it's Aria.
And Angie.
And it looks like we've been suspended from YouTube yet again. It's unclear and I can't pull it up to see what's going on. So that happens a lot. And that's why we're on Library. Library is an uncensorable, decentralized, blockchain-based media sharing protocol. And we love it here on Free Talk Live since it allows our videos to be viewable when YouTube decides that they don't like what we're saying. In 2020, Library launched Odyssey, which is a video sharing website that is meant to compete with YouTube. And it's really taking off with now over 1 million channels, and we stream there every night at video.freetalklive.com. So check it out if you're like us and you're a little bit tired of having your content blocked on Facebook. Video.freetalklive.com will take you directly to our channel. That's video.freetalklive.com. And I forgot to even mention it during the first segment of the show, but I titled tonight's show, Aria, Queen of Keen. And there's a reason for that. I don't know if it was talked about last night because I was working, but I'm running for mayor here in Keene, and it's funny. I love it. But I've decided I'm not running for mayor. I'm going to run for queen. And then I decided, no, I'm going to declare myself Queen of Keene, and the election is just to see whether or not Keene coronates me, right?
I love it.
Because that's what every king and queen has done in the past. They just declared themselves to be king or queen, and they used, you know, soldiers to enforce their rule. Because just imagine the insanity of a back in, you know, whatever century it would have been, 1500 BCE or whatever, someone saying, yes, I am queen of this place. I am in charge. It's just some random person. I'm like, yeah, shut up. And grandma, go back. You're senile, right?
Here comes her army to enforce it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Everyone would have ignored it, except they always had an army to enforce it.
Yep.
Because the army, you know, they saw that they could get a slice of the pie if they backed the queen.
And she took the throne with no problem after that.
And of course, I don't have an army and I don't want an army, but I'm declaring myself Queen of Keene anyway. And I got permission today to create the website. It's keenqueen.com. And that's going to be the campaign. There's nothing on it yet, so don't even bother to go to it. I just got the approval today, and I started, you know, the very basics of procuring the domain name and all of that. So it's going to be fun. I'm going to make a video. I'm really excited about it, of me and Azria playing, and it's going to have the, you know, happy, positive-sounding campaign music in the background, and then at the end, it's going to have the epic voice guy say something like, a vote for Demezzo is a vote for puppies. You don't hate puppies, do you? Vote for Demezzo. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it.
So yeah. Keen Queen is K-E-E-N-E Queen?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a little bit difficult to say keenqueen.com.
Yeah.
Because, and then I kept thinking, was it queenkeen.com? But that doesn't make any sense. So it's going to...
Queen.
Yes.
I like it.
I'm looking forward to it. I've already been interviewed by two media outlets about it, and there's another coming tomorrow. So it's going to be fun. It's not going to be a repeat of the sheriff campaign by any means. At least I hope it's not.
What do you mean not a repeat?
Well, the sheriff campaign got a lot of coverage.
It did, yes. And so is this one.
I don't think this one's going to get nearly that much coverage.
You haven't even been a candidate for 24 hours and you're on your third interview probably. So, I mean, this is going to be huge.
I hope not, because it really was not fun. Parts of it were fun, but it was too hectic to really be fun. I mean, at one point during the sheriff campaign, Ian was having to go pick up dinner for me so that I could eat it in between interviews and 15-minute segments
because
I didn't have time for anything else. It was not fun. Parts of it were, but the hectic period of interviews that lasted like 2.5, maybe 3 weeks, it was not fun at all, and I don't want to do it again. But anyway, I'm running for mayor, and Ian is running for city council, I think.
Okay.
I don't know if we had anyone running for Ward 1 in city council. As it turns out, nobody had filed. So we're going to wait and see on that. I never got an update. It's a lot of fun. Look forward to seeing interesting Aria-style crap from me in regard to the mayoral race. Because both of the people who I talked with today was like, well, why are you doing this? What's your message? I'm like, my message is just how stupid the system is, right? I'm going to make this campaign video of me playing with my dog and accusing people who don't vote for me of hating puppies, right? Because that's what politicians do. And it's going to be some level of successful. And a lot of people are going to like the stupid video just because there's a cute puppy in it. So that's my agenda here, is to show how stupid this whole thing really is.
Now, when is voting? Like, when does it end?
I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
They made it out as though, the paperwork I did made it out as though it takes place during the primary. That's when the mayor is decided. It's suggested.
Okay.
But there is no primary for mayor because mayor isn't a partisan election here in Keene.
You have one person running against you, like the current mayor?
There is the current mayor and another older gentleman about whom I know nothing.
Okay.
So there's three of us. And
you're the only queen.
I am the only queen on the ballot.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to all of these shenanigans that I can get into. And there are so many possibilities. Less than 24 hours from when I, filed to run for office, I was declaring myself Queen of Keene. So let's just wait and see what I come up with over the next few weeks. It's going to be a lot of fun. What's not a lot of fun, though, is the Biden tax plan that is aiming to force all banking institutions, including PayPal, Venmo, and Cash App, to report transactions basically to the IRS, as well as cryptocurrency exchanges. But we saw that coming, and they're already doing that, so that's not new. An IRS with the ability to compel global transaction data sounds like something out of a Philip K. Dick novel. I don't know who that is.
Me neither.
Yet here we are, unless we consciously cover our tracks. Another concern is that the information reporting regime will shift taxpayers toward a greater use of cash, said the Treasury Department's compliance plan. It also notes that cryptocurrencies, quote, already pose a significant detection problem by facilitating illegal activity broadly, including tax evasion. Now, that's the Treasury Department talking, but we've already heard from the Department of Justice, the FBI, and all sorts of governmental agencies that say, hey, look, yeah, there's not a whole lot of illegal activity that cryptocurrency is being used for, and it turns out that's because it's traceable. Like any other digital transaction, Bitcoin is completely and totally traceable. Cash and crypto may be the last currencies compatible with privacy. Well, that's true of some cryptocurrencies like Monero and Hush and some others. I think Horizon is a privacy coin.
When you say traceable, you mean that they can go back and trace where it comes from, like the origination?
Yes.
Okay.
They can trace Bitcoin all the way back to the Genesis block to find out exactly where Bitcoins came from.
And then they can trace it back to like an IP address?
They can probably do that.
Okay.
I don't know. But I mean, certainly they have ways of tying specific wallet IDs to individuals.
Okay.
So it's not as anonymous as people like to think. I promise to lead the world to deliver a foreign policy for the middle class. And today we are doing just that. That's what Biden said. I don't think it's going to happen, but it would be bad for the world economy if it did. When we get back, we're going to talk about the LAPD and its plan to have people looked into on their social media whenever a cop pulls them over. 603-283-6160. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
When Monster Hunter International discovers one of Isaac Newton's wardstones being auctioned off, they decide to steal it and use it to destroy the Chaos God once and for all. But a mysterious thief upends their plan, and it soon becomes a race against time as something much older and infinitely more evil awakens in the jungles of South America. Monster Hunter Bloodlines by New York Times bestselling author Larry Correa and Bain Books. Visit MonsterHunterNation.com for more.
It is Free Talk Live, and we speak freely, and YouTube has indeed given us another strike for that. We're now back up to one strike. It'll just be a matter of time before the YouTube channel is deleted realistically. So watch us in the meantime at video.freetalklive.com. But I want to tell you about bitcoin.com. It is the best place to go to learn about cryptocurrency. And if you don't know about this world-changing information, It's really past time for you to look into it. Go to bitcoin.com, click getting started at the top of the page. They have a number of short videos for you to watch. Just take a few minutes out of your day to do this, and it could very well change your life. It certainly has changed the world. And if you already are knowledgeable about cryptocurrency, bitcoin.com still has something to offer at news.bitcoin.com, where you can stay up to date on all of the headlines that are relevant to you, all on a sleek and easy to use modern website. That's bitcoin.com. One of my favorite websites to go to prior to March the 16th, because they always had interesting news there. But we're going to move on and talk about the LAPD and the scary things happening there.
Yeah, I found the story on TheGuardian.com. Sam Levin wrote it in Los Angeles. It says that LAPD officers are told to collect social media data on every civilian they stop.
What would be the point of this?
I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe you can gather what people do in their personal time whenever you look at their social media?
Perhaps. I mean, and how is the cop going to react if you're constantly posting things like F the police or something like that?
Oh, they're
going
to give you a much harder time. They may even detain you and take you in.
They might.
Why wouldn't they?
Yep. Scary stuff.
The article says the Los Angeles Police Department has directed its officers to collect the social media information of every single civilian they interview, including individuals who are not arrested or accused of a crime, according to records shared with The Guardian.
How are they supposed to acquire this? Do they just look you up on Facebook?
Well, that's what I was going to say, because if they have your name and your information, they can just look your name up. They can search it, but they have to go into their account, right, to search it?
I think so. I mean, I don't know to what extent Facebook will let people see things without being logged in. I tend to post everything as just said as public, because
I do too.
I know someone's going to screenshot it and share it around anyway if I say something stupid. So why not go ahead and make it public myself, right?
You know, I came off of Facebook probably like 3 months ago after Michael was like on top of me, it was hard to come off of Facebook because you have it and you look at it and you read all of this stuff. And I spent hours and hours wasting time. And then once I came off of it, it was like, oh, wow, the flowers are pretty. They smell nice. You know,
I use Facebook like most people use Twitter. I just post things and then I go about my day.
I remember you saying that. So you don't look at comments or anything?
Not usually. I do when I'm running for office. Like right now, I'm monitoring the shares and the comments and stuff like that because, you know, I'm trying to get a message out there.
Yeah.
And now's a good time for that. But in general, no. Once I post something, I'm done with it.
Not me. I used to get enthralled in conversations and battles. And I remember someone saying that arguing on the internet was like winning in the Special Olympics.
It's very true. I'm in a group called, I was in a group called Dinosaurs Against Christians Against Dinosaurs, because apparently there's this Facebook group called Christians Against Dinosaurs where they argue that dinosaurs aren't real or whatever. So there's another group called Dinosaurs Against Christians Against Dinosaurs, and I'm in that group. Well, I was in that group. But someone posted something, and they posted a meme mocking the deaths of people from COVID-19 in the South and calling them rednecks and hillbillies. What did they call them? They had a special term for it. It was like rednecks, except it involved COVID-19. And I'm not going to remember. Spreadnecks. That was it. So I posted, imagine claiming to be motivated by sympathy and love for other human beings and then mocking people as they die.
Right.
And I ended up receiving like 40 or 50 comments of people just saying, oh, we found the spreadneck and stuff like that. And I just looked at it. I was like, yeah. I'm not arguing with you idiots.
Nope, that's it. Yeah, that's exactly what they're looking for, though, is for you to get in there and then for them to be able to pick apart every comment that you make.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they made so many assumptions about me, like, oh, we found the unvaccinated person. I was like, you have literally no idea whether I'm vaccinated or not.
Yes.
But wasn't worth my time. They ended up kicking me out of the group over that comment.
I was going to ask you why you weren't in the group anymore.
That's why. They didn't care much.
Was it
that.
A big loss, Aria?
No, because there were too many people in that group posting too much nonsense all the time. Like, I'm all for the Aqua Teen Hunger Force-S posting group that I'm in because it generates a lot of really funny stuff.
Right.
But what they were doing was just, as they say, the left can't meme. And there was just hard left memes in there all the time. It's just like, yeah. It's not worth it to even be in here. I joined it because it was supposed to be funny. Dinosaurs against Christians. How do you have a group called Dinosaurs Against Christians Against Dinosaurs? And it doesn't have funny content.
And then it's very serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
That's great. The article says copies of the field interview cards that police complete when they question civilians reveal that the LAPD police officers are instructed to record a civilian's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and other social media accounts alongside basic biographical information. An internal memo further shows that the police chief, Michael Moore, told employees that it was critical to collect the data for use in investigations, arrests, and prosecutions, and warned that supervisors would review the cards to ensure that they were complete.
So they're taking this seriously. So,
yeah.
So they want this to assist them in their investigations. And from what I'm gathering, it sounds like they want to use people's social media posts against them in court.
Well, I imagine that they could, because most people are not private. When they go onto social media, like especially like Facebook or something, they post pictures of paraphernalia and they post pictures of plants and they post pictures of just random stuff. And you're like, did you really put that out there? Like, that's my first thought about it.
People make weird decisions about what they post online. That's certainly true.
And then if they are, you know, intoxicated in any manner, then they're completely posting things that they shouldn't put out there.
Sure. I do that all the time. But I mean, the things I post are just aggressively stupid and not necessarily of anything like illegal that's going to get me arrested or whatever, obviously. Right?
That's because you can still think. You still have logic there. Most people don't when they do things. They lose all, you know, ability to reason.
Like the movie plot idea that I have that I posted about a few days ago. I was hammered when I posted that.
I don't know about that. You want to share it?
I can't share it on the air.
Okay.
But it's really funny. I'll tell you about it during the break.
All right, that sounds good. It says the documents, which were obtained by the not-for-profit organization, the Brennan Center for Justice, have raised concerns about civil liberties and the potential for mass surveillance of civilians without justification. There are real dangers about police having all of this social media identifying information at their fingertips, said Rachel, a deputy director of the Brennan Center, noting that the information was probably stored in a database that could be used for a wide range of purposes. The Brennan Center conducted...
I mean, they certainly already have this, though.
Well, they do. If they have your name and where you live, they're going to know information about you. Anybody can pull it up. It's public.
Yeah.
But then what happens if your account is private? Then what? You have to give me your access. I have to get into your account. Is that what they're going to say to people? They're going to threaten them?
I don't think they can compel you to give them access to your account.
So anyone in Los Angeles, make your account private. That way if they go and look at it, it says, I'm sorry, the account is private.
Yeah, that's a good idea, I guess. And it doesn't mean you're doing anything illegal if you have it set private. It just means you want privacy.
Exactly. Maybe you don't want them to know how many kids you actually have.
Right?
I mean,
or whether or not you're in a relationship or when you were born or whatever, your marital status.
Exactly.
All of this nonsense that people reveal about themselves on social media.
Says that the Brennan Center conducted a review of 40 other police agencies in the U.S. and was unable to find another department that required social media collection on interview cards, though many have not publicly disclosed copies of the cards. The organization also obtained records about the LAPD's social media surveillance technologies, which have raised questions about the monitoring of activist groups, including Black Lives Matter. Surveillance concerns. In 2015, the department added social media accounts as a line on the physical field interview cards, according to a newly unearthed memo from the previous LAPD chief, Charlie Beck. Similar to a nickname.
So they've been doing this for almost 6 years.
Since 2015, they had that on their cards. Says similar to a nickname or an alias, a person's online persona or identity used for social media can be highly beneficial to investigators.
Yeah, which is why they shouldn't have it.
It just shows that the eye is always watching.
Yep. What do you think? Should you set your profile as private if you live in Los Angeles to avoid having it spied on by cops? 603-283-6160. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. With you tonight, it's Aria.
And Angie.
And you're welcome to join us. 603-283-6160. That's the number for you to do that. You can take control of the airwaves and talk about whatever you want. 603-283-6160. And for too long, the federal government has overstepped its bounds, refusing to abide the Constitution and committing heinous war crimes both abroad and at home. They've destroyed the currency, and they don't seem to care about their routine violations of our rights. But even if that wasn't the case, isn't it absurd that people in California and other states thousands of miles away get to determine who rules over you. At NHExit.us, we're trying to change that. We've proposed an amendment to the New Hampshire Constitution that would allow New Hampshire to declare its independence from the shenanigans, the warmongering, and economic destruction wrought by the United States government. Sign the petition today at NHExit.us. Let's see New Hampshire exit the U.S. and declare independence. NHExit.us. Now, we're talking about LAPD, which is limited to California, to be fair.
Yes.
But that's only at the moment. I mean, this could catch on and become more widespread in departments. This has been going on there for 5 or 6 years.
Since 2015.
And no one seems to have really known that it was going on. Now other police departments are going to learn about it. And they're like, hey, that could actually be useful.
Well, it says the article goes on to say that while the social media collection has gone largely unnoticed, the LAPD's use of field interview cards has prompted controversy. Last October, prosecutors filed criminal charges against three officers in the LAPD's Metro Division, accusing them of using the cards to falsely label citizens as gang members after stopping them.
You know what else they could do? I mean, this takes, you know, there have been a lot of examples of a hot girl going into a store and then a few hours later getting a message from someone who worked there on Facebook,
right,
or
that,
Twitter,
like, took
or whatever.
Her number.
Yeah. And now we have that possibility with police.
Isn't it scary?
Yeah. Oh, she's pretty cute. Oh, and I have her Facebook right
yeah,
here.
Yeah. Or you like get a friend request and you don't know it's the police officer because maybe you don't recognize them and it's just not blatantly, they don't have a blue line. And you're like, oh, he's cute. I'll friend him.
Yeah. It's not good.
No, they're going to learn all kinds of crap about you.
Unless your profile is set to private.
Yeah, but if you accept him as a friend, they're going to see
it. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I accept, like, I used to. I accepted anyone as a friend. You would friend me and I'd be like, oh, yeah, you'll do good.
As long as you have a few mutual friends, I don't have a hard number, like maybe two. I don't know. I don't give it much thought. I will generally accept the request because I'm like, okay, well, this is at least someone who knows someone that I know.
Yeah, but then if you start accepting people that like you may not know that just has a couple mutual, then you have like them as a mutual friend and somebody else that was their mutual friend, and now you don't know any of them.
Yeah, and it changed last year during the sheriff campaign because things were blowing up, so I just pretty much accepted everyone and ended up with close to 1,000 friends at this point. Most of them I have no idea who the hell they are and never will. So,
but you know about their lives.
Not like, really.
Because you don't read the stories.
Yeah, I don't really browse Facebook.
Good for you.
I do occasionally, like when I first wake up in the morning to just see what's going on in the world, because you know I'm limited in what news I can access, so I can't just go to Google and see what the latest headlines are. And Facebook, you know, what people are talking about gives me a general idea. Okay, good. Their world didn't implode last night when I was sleeping.
It does. That was one thing that I liked about it when I was on it, is that you could get an idea of what was going on in the world. Because I learned, I was like, wow, the White House got stormed? What? What do you mean? I had no idea.
And it's a really good way of keeping up with the Libertarian Party's drama. There's more drama going on with it right now. I don't know why anyone is continuing to invest energy in the Libertarian Party. The Free State Project has accomplished so much more in the last 10 years than the Libertarian Party has accomplished in the last, like, 50.
Yep.
That there's just no contest. One of these is working. One of these is not.
And people are still investing more time in the one that is not.
Yes. That's the Libertarian Party. It's because they're ultra-focused on the presidency. And that's the only thing that matters to them in the National Libertarian Party. It's like, oh, we have to get a Libertarian president. But there hasn't been a Libertarian candidate who has gotten near 5% in our lifetimes, and I don't see it happening anytime soon.
I was going to ask that question. When was the last Libertarian president?
Yeah, we never had one.
Exactly.
But here in New Hampshire, we do have many free state movers, free staters, who are in the legislature.
Yes, we do.
And some of them are proposing the constitutional amendment here pretty soon that you can find out more about it in NHExit.us that would it would require the state of New Hampshire to declare independence from the federal government.
Now, can you tell me if the state of New Hampshire decides to declare independence, how successful is that? Do you think that's going to be? What are the steps they have to do in order to accomplish that?
I don't know. There aren't very many references to the United States government in the New Hampshire Constitution. The New Hampshire Constitution, though, for those who haven't read it, it's really hardcore on some stuff.
Okay.
Like, it includes a right to revolt at number 10 in the first article. And it takes all of the rights that you'll find in the U.S. Constitution's Bill of Rights. It takes them and expands them and goes into far more detail and takes a much stronger approach to them.
Okay.
basically, instead of allowing you freedom of religion, it's like you can worship whoever you want in whatever way you want. So it just, it's the same basic idea, but it goes a lot further. Instead of the right to bear arms, it's just not right. You have the right to revolt against the government. And it's weird to find that
where
in a
can
state's
I find
constitutional.
That?
That is in, it's in the first article and it's the 10th.
No, but like where, if I wanted to go read the New Hampshire Constitution, where can I find a copy?
Oh, you just have to Google New Hampshire Constitution,
yeah.
Presumably. Yeah, you should be able to find it. So, I mean, that's happening here. It would, the way this works is that the reps have to file the bill and it goes to the legislative wording committee. I don't remember exactly what it's called. And they figure out the legalese way to write the bill and they kick it back to the representatives who entered it. And the representatives either say, okay, yes, this is close enough to what we had in mind, or they reject it. And
okay,
it gets sent back and there's some back and forth. I don't know the details, never having been in the state legislature and not wanting to be because it sounds pretty tedious. Then it gets every bill in New Hampshire gets a hearing. So it gets some sort of subcommittee hearing and, you know, people get to speak why they want to see this move forward or why they don't want it to see move forward. And I'm really looking forward to hearing arguments from representatives about why they don't think the people of New Hampshire should have this ballot question upon which they can vote. Because it's one thing to say, okay, no, I don't think New Hampshire should declare independence. It's quite another to say, I don't think you should be allowed to vote on whether or not New Hampshire should declare independence.
Right.
And the state reps who are against independence, that's fine. They can vote no on the ballot question, but they will play their hand to say, we don't want people to even have the option of voting yes on this. So it's probably not going to get past committee, but if it does, then I think next year on the ballot here in New Hampshire, we'll have a question, very short. I think it's two sentences. Basically, should the state of New Hampshire declare independence from the United States federal government? Something to that effect. I don't remember the exact wording. We went back and forth over like the last 4 weeks finalizing the exact wording. And
okay,
I don't remember what the exact wording is. And of course, it's only found at ShireSociety.com, which I have not been given permission to use, so I'm not exactly sure what the wording is, but it's very short, very succinct, and hopefully it will be on the ballot next year for people to vote on.
Yeah, that would be great.
It would be great, and it would be interesting to see the results, but it's also a good way to just get the idea of secession out there and independence in people's minds, because the first time anyone hears an idea, it sounds crazy,
mm-hmm.
but the more they hear it, the less crazy it sounds because they're just more adjusted to it.
Right.
So let's get people hearing about secession and independence. And of course, right now, just about everyone in the United States has heard about it with CalExit and
yes,
Texit. I think they were calling the one Texit. In Texit. I think that's what they were calling it. I mean, Texas is always talking about secession, right?
Yes.
So the idea is people have heard it before. Are they ready for it? Probably not.
I don't know, but you know, they might Google it. They might research it.
Yep.
They might open their minds up a little bit.
And there are also resources at nhexit.us that point to other New Hampshire independence websites, because we didn't want nhexit to be overloaded with arguments and mm-hmm. all of that sort of thing. So it just has links to places where people can learn why secession is a good idea.
Yeah.
And solutions to some of these problems that people propose, like, oh, but what are you going to do without the U.S. military? It's like, live in peace with the rest of the world? Maybe that.
Yeah, we'll save a ton of money.
The only threat of being invaded if New Hampshire was independent would be from the United States.
Exactly.
I'm not particularly worried about China or Russia trying to invade New Hampshire, which whether or not it's part of the United States government would never allow. So the United States government isn't going to allow New Hampshire to get taken over by, you know, the Communist Party of China or whatever. So I mean, a lot of these questions are null and void anyway. And it's silly to even have to address these things. It's like, well, a lot of nations don't have a standing army and they're not getting invaded 24/7. I think Switzerland or Sweden doesn't have an army and they're doing just fine. So check that out. That's nhexit.us and sign the petition, because there is one of those there. You know, petitions don't do anything, but it's still good to sign them and show that there is support for this idea.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on declaring independence? 603-283-6160.
After a devastating war, the alien visitors were driven back, and their willing human collaborators were left behind to face the music. When Imogene Anderson's ex-lover springs her from prison, Nathan Foster and his 14-year-old nephew, Ben, are tasked with bringing the pair to justice. An easy enough job until they discover something is inside Imogene, and the fate of the planet hangs in the balance. The Family Business by Mike Coopery from BaneBooks.com.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live. You can join us, 603-283-6160 if you want to do that. And who is us exactly? It's Aria.
And Angie.
And we've still got some interesting stories coming up as always. Brittany's father is filing to end the conservatorship. I don't know whether or not the Free Britney thing has even been talked about here on Free Talk Live. It's a major news item, and I've just been sort of watching it from a distance, hoping that this poor woman is set free, and it looks like that may finally happen. Although a judge still has to sign it for some reason.
Even though her dad wants to step down and she wants him to step down, the judge has to okay it.
Yeah, apparently.
Control.
Judges are just arbitrary control freaks, yep. Right? And I mean, there's documents of judges saying things like, this is my court, the Constitution doesn't apply here, and stuff like that. A lot of them are just on a power trip, regrettably. But anyway, we have Dave Ridley calling from Ridley Report. Dave, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, all.
Hey, what's on your mind tonight?
I have an NH exit update, a couple of things.
Okay, sweet. We were just talking about that.
Yeah, I was responding to what you were saying earlier. In a sense, you were talking about, you know, the worry that it might not even get out of committee. The likelihood is that actually that's not a problem. The committee, once it gets to committee in New Hampshire, it goes all the way to the state house.
Oh, really? So it's not likely to die in committee?
Well, it could be amended in committee severely. And so what could happen is, you know, it could go to the state house, but look different, a lot different from what it looks like right now,
okay.
Which is, you know, essentially worded as a peaceable declaration of independence. But the main danger I see, and I don't know, because I'm not sure what the precedent is exactly, but it would be something happens to it on the way to committee. Either they ambush the state rep in some way, politically, as he's trying to get it to committee, or the legislative services might interfere in some way. There's this bureaucracy that sort of words things, like when a state rep.
That's what they're called,
bill,
yes. Legislative services.
Yeah,
thank you.
They'll say, oh, okay, we know how to write that, you know? And of course, but these are people who are pretty heavily dependent on the system, probably. So,
well, they could still be dependent on the system if New Hampshire was independent. They could be more dependent on the system, given that New Hampshire is one of few states that is a net taxpayer, which means New Hampshire gives more money to the federal government than it receives from the federal government. So instead of paying that money to the federal government, they could just use it to line their own pockets, which wouldn't really be an improvement, but it does mean they could possibly have more money with which to play. Not that I want that. But
anything's possible. But the last people who are going to come around to this idea of New Hampshire independence are probably the people inside the New Hampshire bureaucracy. At least the last people who were outside the federal government who were going to come over to.
True, and
I could be wrong, but that would be my expectation.
And this does not have to get signed by Governor Sununu, right? If it both passes the House and the Senate, it automatically gets onto the ballot. Sununu doesn't have to sign it, and he can't veto it or anything like that. Correct.
He cannot veto it. This goes around the governor.
Okay. Good. That's reassuring.
However, it's very unlikely to get past the House, because it would require a 60% majority in the House just to get to the Senate, where it requires another 60% majority. The objective here is just to trigger debate and cause the federal government to be more cautious. If we get further than that, I would be amazed. But that's up to the federal government, right? If the federal government were to commit some major atrocity between now and then that would change the whole dynamic.
Well, I don't know if I'm that pessimistic about it. You know, it's basically just, I don't know how many state reps or senators are going to be willing to say, yeah, you know what, I don't want the people of New Hampshire to even be able to vote on this idea. And that's essentially what they would have to say in order to shoot down the proposed amendment. And I don't know how many are going to be willing to do that.
We'll see. It just depends on a lot of different things.
Oh, certainly.
At this point, I'm not seeing the kind of vibe or excitement or flood of activists that you would expect to see in order, preceding a major upset success. I don't think we have that yet. We may have it later after the bill becomes submitted.
Well, I mean, it's important to remember that the bill has not yet been submitted, and NHXA.us, I mean, we just started promoting it on the show tonight. So, I mean, a lot of people, if they don't listen to Free Talk Live, and we have a decent audience, but we're certainly not, reaching everyone in the United States. The media isn't going to cover this until the bill gets filed and it starts making headlines, and hopefully the media will direct people to NHXA.us, but I doubt that they will. But presumably people
will. One of the articles attacking us last week mentioned NHXA.us.
Oh, really? Well, that's positive. So maybe, we will get some traffic there. We'll get some signatures. But I mean, like the petition, Ian just got that up today. So prior to today, there was nothing for people to really go there and see or do. I was hoping to be administrating this, but then I realized I have to request permission. I have a number of,
you have to request permission from the federal government to administer your website requesting, departure from the federal government.
Yes. And that's why, that's why it's very important that I get that permission, to be honest. And I'm curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah. So if they deny you permission to work on an independent, a piece of legislation or something like that, that's great, because then you'd let me know so I can publicize that. But I did actually call to talk about something slightly different NH Exit related, and that is that NH Exiter Alu Axelman has published his 74 reasons why New Hampshire should divorce D.C.
All right. Awesome.
And my favorite one is the one that affects almost everyone, or at least we think it does. And that is that he's calculating that the average American would save $25,000 a year each just by having the federal income tax out of their picture.
You mean the average New Hampshire resident?
Well, he says, quote, we'd save around $25,000 a year. I'm assuming he's talking about each person, each average person.
Okay. Curious. I don't think that much taxes are being taken that go to the federal government here in New Hampshire. So I'd be interested to see what calculations he made to determine that.
Maybe it's a generalized amongst everyone in the United States.
Well, I think it's just the average person. The average person is going to be the average of a very, very poor person and a billionaire. So that probably brings it up to 25,000. But, I don't know.
Maybe. Well, thank you so much for the call tonight, David. Thanks for the clarifications on how this stuff works. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. I'm excited for this bill to get filed. And obviously that can't even happen yet. They're not in session or whatever the terminology is for that. But that's coming up in, I think 2 weeks is when they'll be in session. So in just a few short weeks, this thing will be getting sent to legislative services and will be getting officially filed.
So we have a couple of weeks to promote it and to get it out there and to get attention to it.
Well, we have longer than that, because after it gets filed, it goes to legislative services, as I said, and they come up with the official wording, and then it goes to the committee. And through all of these stages, we can continue promoting it.
Okay.
I mean, even up until presumably the time it gets put on the ballot, which realistically, I don't expect to happen, because I think there are a lot of state reps and senators who would find some way of saying that they don't want the average citizen in New Hampshire to be able to vote on this without explicitly saying that. I mean, this is what politicians do, especially in the Senate.
Yeah, of course.
There are snakes, and they're really good at saying things without explicitly saying them.
But yes.
An argument against this constitutional amendment is an argument saying that you don't think people should be able to vote on a constitutional amendment because you personally don't like what could happen if the people are against it. That's a dictatorship, and that's not representative democracy. In a representative democracy, the senators, the reps would be like, okay, yeah, let's see what the people want. If that's what the people want, that's what we'll do. But I don't expect them to do that because they aren't. This isn't a representative democracy. It just claims to be.
They just want us to think that we have a choice.
Yes, it's an oligarchy, for sure. And the senators are going to do whatever the senators want to do, and the representatives are going to do what the representatives want to do, and they really don't care what you want them to do. And that's sort of the problem with the whole representation thing, is that these people have their own agendas and their own goals. 603-283-6160. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live with Aria and Angie, and you can join us. 603-283-6160 if you want to do that. That's 603-283-6160. And one of the things that just continues to bother me is the fact that everyone is hiring, and yet there are still plenty of people who are unemployed. And as far as I'm aware, all of the unemployment benefits and all of the eviction moratoriums and all of the other COVID nonsense have basically by this point gone away.
Correct. They're supposed to have all ended by Labor Day.
So what are people doing for money, and where are they living that they don't need jobs? I'm told that a lot of these people have moved back home and they're living with their parents. Okay, sure. But are their parents not like, hey, you got to get a job or you're getting out?
I don't know. A lot of the people that have moved back home with their parents have this this self-pity thing, you know, oh, woe is me, and feel bad for me, and I'm depressed, and I'm on these antidepressants, and I'm taking all these medications. And their parents are like, oh, honey, it's okay.
Their parents are enabling that sort of
That's
thing.
That's exactly right.
So it's bad parenting. That's possible. I guess I was lucky in that regard. I was told that at 16, hey, get a job or get out.
Right.
And I was like, hey, I'm going to do both. Thanks.
Yeah, that's pretty much what ours was told. Hey, you got to contribute or you got to find a different place. And he said, okay, I'm out.
Yep. Worked out well. But there are help wanted signs everywhere throughout here in Keene. I had someone recently ask me, hey, do you know anywhere that's hiring? Yeah, like
look
everywhere.
Around. Exactly. That's what Michael said. He said, I don't understand why people can't find jobs when they come here. Because everybody needs help.
They do. In the Free State Project Facebook group, someone was posting, hey, I work in food service, and I just want to make sure that there's going to be a job for me when I land in New Hampshire. Like, dude, there are jobs
pick.
For you already.
Yes.
Let's go. Get over here and help make some food, because the people who make food for a living are not okay right now.
Have you noticed that a lot of the food service industry businesses are closing early and the hours are limited because they don't have any help?
This happens at my other place of employment. That's one of the reasons I wasn't here yesterday. It was because I was supposed to work like 9 in the morning till 2:30 in the afternoon. A really easy light shift, not a big deal. But then the GM had something going on with her mother. Her mother was getting out of the hospital and she was like, hey, can you cover for me? And it became a 14-hour shift, where one person called out and it ended up being just three of us to do everything, and no one, their people interview and then that's the last time you ever see them.
How big is an average staff for like a shift at your place of employment?
It generally would have been 5.
So you were really short.
Yeah, we're about half capacity at the moment. It's not good. And, you know, we're not alone there. I have a friend who works at a McDonald's in Ohio who has worked with 2 people in the store, and you know, McDonald's have drive-thrus, and one person has to be there doing that. One person has to be making food, and they did that with 2 people. And I don't know if you've ever worked at a McDonald's. I did around the time I was, I think, 17. They never stop.
No.
Once that lunch rush starts, it's just they are constantly making food until the end of the night.
I worked at a Hardee's, and I worked drive-thru, and so we opened at 5 a.m., and from 5 a.m. to like 3 in the afternoon, you were slammed. You did nothing but run orders.
There may be a break between like 3 and 5 p.m., but it's a minor one, and because people are taking breaks during that time.
Yeah, and you still have people coming through. It's just not as busy.
Yeah, it sucks in food service, and right now you have Applebee's here in Keene. They haven't been taking online orders for weeks. I don't even know if they're still open at the moment. They're probably closing early. There's no telling how these other places are really doing.
And I wonder
but it's
how
not good.
Like people, when you go to someone and you have a server, I wonder if they're tipping any better because they know that these people are short staffed and they know they're working harder. And I assume that, you know, they need the money, that I'm going to pay them better because I appreciate them being there.
In my experience, it depends on the age of the person.
Okay.
If they're above 40 or 50 or so, they don't have any patience or understanding or concern. They don't care.
No.
The boomers, basically, are acting throughout this process exactly how you would expect the boomers
to. They're acting like children.
Yes. They are Karens all the way. But anyone younger than that, they're like, oh, okay, yeah, I see how short-staffed you are. Like, someone came in last night and did exactly that. There were three of us, and they came in. They wanted to place an order, and they saw how busy we were. And they said, you know what? You guys have a good night. I'm just going to go home and cook something.
Yeah, like, you were like, thank you.
14 hours yesterday, though, I learned some interesting things about myself. And, you know, generally, I'm known as the nice one. When customers have complaints, I'm the one who deals with them because I'm nice and I, you know, make them happy. But after hour 12, that's no longer the case. Hanging up on people left and right, being accused of not caring about the customers and responding, yeah, you're right, I don't. And hanging up is frustrating. And it's silly that it's to that point, but it's like that everywhere.
It is.
I don't know what the staffing is like at the McDonald's here in Keene.
They are short-staffed.
I would imagine they are. I mean, Wendy's has basically given up. They just have one word sitting on their sign, and it's just hiring. Not even we're hiring.
I know the manager of Wendy's, and like they're struggling.
Yeah. It's like that everywhere, and nobody wants to fill those jobs. I don't understand, and I don't think anyone else does either. But the disconnect is jarring across the United States. Employers who are desperate to fill jobs have posted a record high number of job openings. They're raising pay too and dangling bonuses to people who accept job offers or recruit their friends. Yep, I know how all that goes. And yet, millions more Americans are unemployed compared with the number who were jobless just before the viral pandemic flattened the economy a year and a half ago. Well, again, the viral pandemic did not flatten the economy. The government did. The puzzling mismatch is a reflection of an unsettled economy, one that all but shut down at the height of the pandemic, thanks to the government, then bounced back with unexpected speed and strength, thanks to the rollout of vaccines and vast infusions of government spending. I don't think it has bounced back. I think it's an illusion and that we just haven't seen the prices go up as a result of all of that government spending, and I think we will see that pretty soon. And now the economic outlook has been clouded yet again by a resurgence of COVID-19 cases linked to the highly contagious Delta variant, and apparently the Mu variant has been found in 49 out of the 50 states.
I haven't heard of that one yet.
I saw someone on Facebook talking about it. I haven't seen any headlines about it or anything like that, so I don't know. But apparently they think that it's going to win the survival of the fittest contest. No, the Delta variant will win the survival of the fittest contest. I'm like, well, it really only matters which one of these bypasses the vaccine because
exactly.
That's going to be the one that wins.
Mm-hmm.
On Wednesday, the Labor Department reported that employers posted almost 11 million job openings in July, the most on record dating to 2000. So more job openings in July than in the last 20 years. For job seekers, the abundance of vacancies is a welcome occurrence, yet the magnitude of unfulfilled job openings poses a potential problem for the economy, especially if it persists over the long run. Companies that are short of employees can't capitalize on a surge in consumer demand, thereby hampering economic growth. Companies that are short of employees right now can't handle the demand that was being dealt with prior to the pandemic, but that demand, I can tell you from experience, has only increased.
That's crazy.
While the staff was cut in half virtually everywhere.
So they're working the employees to death and they're not going to want to work anymore and they're just going to end up quitting.
Yes, and that's going to make the problem just that much worse.
Yep.
The economy cannot take this nonsense. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's not sustainable what is going on right now, and it's not changing anytime soon. What are your thoughts? Why aren't people working? 603-283-6160. There's more coming up about this insane disparity between unemployment and job openings. It's Free Talk Live.
Brute force. intransigent defiance, adamantine will. These are the hallmarks of the AI tank. These gigantic machines have the firepower of an army, but they also have their own sense of honor and duty. When the world breakers arrive, battle will be joined, planets will shake, and war and peace will never be the same again. World Breakers. Stories from David Weber, Larry Correa, and more. Available August 3rd from BaneBooks.com.
It is Free Talk Live, and you can join us 603-283-6160 if you want to do that. You can talk about what we've been discussing, or you can change the subject and talk about whatever is important to you, because that's what we do here on Free Talk Live. We empower you to share your opinions on national radio, close to 200 radio stations. In fact, 603-283-6160. Now, this hiring shortage, and it's not a hiring shortage, this staff shortage that you see everywhere, it's of extreme concern to me as being someone who works at one of these places that has just no staff, and the staff that's there is being worked to death. And the only reason none of us quit is out of loyalty to each other, because we know, hey, if one of us quits, the rest are going to have to quit as well.
Yes.
Because any one of us, it's already at a skeleton staff. Mm-hmm. Losing one more of those is automatic closure.
Yep.
So it's stupid, and it needs to change. And it's everywhere you see. You know, there's higher demand for restaurants and food places than I've ever seen. No one seems to want to cook anymore, and no one wants to stock the shelves at Walmart anymore or do any of these other jobs. I don't know what's going to happen as a result of this, but food prices are going to be going up very soon. They're already going up in many places.
Yep.
So good time to stock up on bottled water and canned goods,
yes.
I would argue.
Get a Berkey.
A what?
A Berkey. Do you know what a Berkey is? It's a filter that you can pour just about any kind of fluid, like water, in it, and it filters it through. So, you know, if you don't have a filter at your home, if you're in the city, you can put it in there and it gets all the bad stuff out.
Okay. Sounds like it's worth looking into.
Absolutely.
I mean, MREs are a bit expensive, so I can't say for sure I'd recommend those. But, you know, canned goods last a really long time.
Even though they say they're bad, sometimes they're still good.
Yeah, and they can last for decades as long as the can isn't dented or cracked or whatever. So I would recommend canned goods and bottled water. Not that I think the economy is going to collapse, but my experience on the ground tells me that what's going on right now is not sustainable. And that by the end of the year, something is going to have changed, and it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Someone told me that they thought this was going to be the year of martial law.
I don't think so. I think that may happen next year as they try to come up with solutions for the economy that they broke.
But it's scary in the fact that it's coming.
It's already happening in Australia and New Zealand.
I saw that.
Yeah, they are fully police states over there. The unprecedented demand for workers, remember, almost 11 million job openings in July, is happening even while 8.5 million Americans are unemployed, which is up from 5.7 million in February 2020. And the economy is still 5.3 million jobs short of the number it had before the pandemic paralyzed the United States. So, still short-staffed relative to what happened prior to the pandemic. Wait. Yes, but also short-staffed in regard to the increased demand.
Mm-hmm.
So there were already 5.3 million jobs. I'm moving on. Employers really want to staff up right now, especially those sectors that were hit hard by the pandemic. Again, not by the pandemic. You can't blame the economic crisis on the pandemic. You can only blame it on the government. But a fair number of unemployed or job seekers don't feel that same sense of urgency. And why don't they? Some would-be job seekers remain fearful of the coronavirus, especially given the spread of the Delta variant. Well,
I wondered how many were afraid of that. How many would not get a job because they said, oh, I might get COVID.
I know I saw an article a number of weeks ago that broke down the reasons why people weren't looking for new jobs. but I don't remember what the percentage reporting COVID-19 or fear of it was.
Yeah.
I think it was something like 21%, but I don't recall.
Well, the unemployment benefits were a huge part of that, and they're not giving those out like they were.
No, they're not. So how are these people still surviving? Some have struggled to find or afford childcare at a time when the status of schools is in flux. Others are rethinking their lives and careers after being locked in at home and spending more time with their families. Whatever the reason, many don't feel the need or desire to just jump into a job right now, and that's because someone else out there is supporting them. Everyone needs to spend money in order to survive. And I say that because we live in a universe where you have to put in effort in order to survive.
Yep.
If we didn't have the economy, you would have to go out there and plant your own food, hunt your own wildlife. A lot of people make the mistake of saying, oh, it's because of capitalism that I have to work for a living, and this is nonsense. I should just be able to sit at home and do whatever I want. But like, dude, that's not capitalism. That's the universe you live in.
Yes.
Requiring you to get out there and sustain animals, organisms that don't sustain themselves, die. That's the nature of our universe. The economy actually and capitalism provide you with the way of doing something that you do kind of enjoy instead of being out there raising a garden and, you know, raising stock and stock animals and hunting wildlife
farm,
and all. I don't want to do that crap. I'm glad other people out there do want to do it, but I don't want to. I want to talk on the radio. And the economy, capitalism, allows me to do that and earn this thing called money that I can use to then buy the groceries that someone else has already raised so that I didn't have to do that. That's not the economy or capitalism causing that. It's just the fact that if I don't eat, I'm going to die.
Well, I can tell you that having a garden is not hard because we put some stuff in the ground, neglected it for I don't know how long, went to Pork Fest, went to Fork Fest, came back, and it was a freaking jungle. And I am harvesting, like, people at my house are harvesting so much food out of my garden. I'm like, how are we going to eat all of this?
Really?
Yeah, like kale and tomatoes and peppers and all kinds of stuff.
That's interesting about tomatoes. They're pretty easy to kill, but I thought kale was like really hard to kill anyway.
Well, like I have like kale bushes, not kale plants, like kale bushes.
Okay. Well, I know Conan, who's on Tuesday nights, talks about gardening a lot, and he seems to spend a lot of time in his garden.
I don't spend hardly any time. Literally, you go out there, the tomato plants are all pushed over and everything is all fallen, and I'm like, hey, let's go harvest some stuff. Come back with buckets full.
Okay, that's cool. It may not be hard, but I still don't want to do it.
I hate it.
Yeah, it's not because it's hard or difficult that I don't want to do it. It's because I have other things I would rather do.
Exactly.
I would rather just go to Hannaford's and buy a tomato than plant my own.
Yep, I go to the farm stand up the road.
There's a farmer's market here twice a week in Keene, and I have never gone to it for groceries. And I know I should, right?
I haven't been to the one in Keene.
I haven't either. So the neediest employers are jacking up pay to try to attract workers. By the way, it's not working because the people aren't applying, so they never get to that point to learn what wage you're offering.
Well, a lot of people now, a lot of companies put it on their reader boards, you know, starting at 14, starting at $16 an hour.
That's probably a good approach.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last year, average hourly wages, even after being adjusted for inflation, have jumped 5.8% for restaurant and bar workers and 6.1% for hotel workers. It may also be time to pay more attention to the genuinely lousy nature of many of the jobs that are available. Let's face it, even $20 per hour with a few, if any, benefits isn't a princely sum. I don't know, dude. $20 per hour is decent money.
Well, when you think about inflation, though, and the price of things going up, the rent, the power, the, you know, groceries, you know, $20 an hour really isn't that much money anymore.
That's true. And that's because, you know, the government subsidizes rent and things like that.
Exactly. And if you make $20 an hour, they're not going to give you those benefits because you make too much money.
Yeah. And you're not going to get rental assistance or any of these
or
other government programs.
Or anything.
In fact, you're going to pay into them and you may end up in a higher tax bracket and end up getting taxed more because you make more money.
So why get a job?
Shapiro suggested that some employers will need to consider offering more flexible work hours, better parental leave policies, and enhanced health care benefits. It doesn't matter. The company I work at just introduced this year 401ks and health insurance and increased everyone's pay and attracted zero new employees as a result of it. So these things don't help. In the meantime, workers are leaving their employers in historic numbers, apparently confident enough in their job prospects to try something new. Well, yes, everywhere is hiring. So if you've ever wanted to quit your job and find a different one, now is the time to do that. almost 4 million people quit their jobs in July, just shy of the record 3.99 million who did so in April. So people are constantly quitting, and it's not getting any better. Many businesses have blamed generous federal unemployment benefits. There's more about this coming up, 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. You can join us, 603-283-6160 if you want to do that. And who is us exactly? Well, it's Aria.
And Angie.
And again, that number is 603-283-6160. We're talking about why people don't want to work, why there are more job openings in the United States than there are unemployed people. And this is something I've wanted for a very long time, because I'm not a communist by any means. But I do believe that the balance of power has shifted steadily in the favor of employers over the last, whenever the hell they implemented the minimum wage, that's when it started.
Employees or employers?
Employers had the power.
Okay.
People were desperate for jobs, and that was true. And
they would work for anything.
Yes. And that's no longer the case right now. And I'm thrilled about it, because now people who want jobs can demand higher pay, more benefits, and all that other wonderful stuff. And they should be able to do that. But what the minimum wage did was it destroyed a large number of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not going to pay someone $15 an hour to clean up your sidewalk or your parking lot or whatever.
Right.
But you'd be willing to pay someone, you know, $3 to, or maybe $15 to come out there and do the full job. There's all kinds of work here in the United States that is not being done. There's windows that aren't being cleaned. There's sidewalks that aren't being cleaned. Parking lots that aren't being cleaned. And why? Well, it's because they can't pay someone to do those things, because those jobs aren't worth the amount of money that the minimum wage requires them to do.
Well, they also used to send employees out when they had an abundance of employees to take care of these small tasks. But they can't do that anymore, because they can't afford to send them outside. They need them on the front line.
Also true. And the result of that was the destruction of jobs, which created the unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
Unemployment seems like it's a perpetual thing here in the United States, where there are always more workers than there are jobs. But when you think about it, that means that too much employment must also be possible. You could have a situation where there are more job openings than there are people seeking jobs, instead of having more people seeking jobs than there are job openings. In one scenario, if there are more job seekers than there are jobs, then the job seekers are competing with one another,
right,
to the employer. They're like, hey, look, I'll work for a buck less than that guy will. I don't require health insurance. Sure, I'll work for you. But if there are more jobs, then the balance of power is reversed. And it's like, okay, the employee is suddenly saying, look, what are you going to offer me?
Yeah, because I'm valuable. I'm a good employee. I show up. I will come in on my shifts that you need help whenever I'm not working. You know,
yes.
I'm going to need benefits, and I'm going to need retirement, and I'm going to need dental, and I'm going to need vision insurance. And the employer has to say, okay, this is what I can give you.
Yes, and it's a wonderful thing, and I'm thrilled to see it happening. I just wish that people would take advantage of it and actually go out and seek these jobs and fill these gaps that are in the economy, but instead they're not. And it's ultimately, this is why I'm against the minimum wage, is because it created this mess, mm-hmm, where there were more people seeking jobs than there were job openings.
So when I was looking for stories today, I read something that they were talking about $15 is no longer a good minimum wage. $24, $26 might be the new minimum
wage. Why stop
there? Exactly.
To make it $1,000. If you're going to wreck the economy, go ahead and wreck it all the way. What a lot of people don't realize is that, look, if you're already making $25 per hour and you're doing some, I don't know what sort of job makes $25 an hour. So I'm going to say advanced welding. I'm just speculating here.
Okay.
And you're an advanced welder, and suddenly the guy over there making burgers, which anyone can do and isn't in any danger of except maybe burning themselves on grease, is making the same amount of money you do, that all of the prices in the economy are going to go up as a result of that influx of,
yes,
money. And you're not making the person making burgers richer by doing this, because the prices will increase correspondingly. You're making the advanced welder as poor as the person making burgers, because now they're making the same wages they're paying the same price. The price to wage ratio changes against the people who make higher amounts of money.
Exactly.
It doesn't help anyone. It just makes everyone equally poor.
And why are people going to want to go to the skills to go to school for skills like that,
right,
if they're not going to make anything more than McDonald's workers?
Yeah. So you'll lose your advanced workers in that scenario. Many businesses have blamed generous federal unemployment benefits, and that's certainly true. And I hate the pushback from the left of, oh, you just have to offer more money and all these other things. And again, that's a neat idea, right? Okay, well, the people would rather sit at home and do nothing because of they're making unemployment benefits and they're making more money doing that than you're offering them to work. Okay, yes, but the government can limitlessly print money. Businesses can't do that. They have to actually earn money, so they do actually have caps on how much money they can pay people.
They have to be in the green in order to stay in business.
Yes, the government has been running in the red for decades, if not since its entire existence. I mean, now the number in the red is like $22, $23 trillion.
That's nothing.
I mean, yeah, right. It's insane. In response, about half of the United States withdrew from the federal program, which is good. But in a report last month, economists Peter McCrory and Daniel Silver of JP Morgan found zero correlation, at least so far, between job growth and state decisions to drop the federal unemployment aid. Interesting. In any case, the federal benefits ended nationwide on Monday, just as more and more schools are reopening. Bunker said he is hopeful that the job market will return to its pre-pandemic state sometime next year. I think you're being optimistic if you think the economy in this condition is going to make it until next year. Then again, the Delta variant and the uptick in COVID-19 cases risks slowing the recovery. On Friday, the Labor Department reported that employers added just 235,000 jobs in August, only about a third of the number that economists had expected, and down dramatically from around 1 million jobs that were added in June and July each. Well, that's because they already added those jobs and the jobs still aren't fulfilled.
Right.
So what they have nothing more to offer.
Didn't it say that 3 to 4 million people quit their jobs in July?
Yes. And that's...
And only 235,000 people got jobs in August.
Yeah.
That's a big red flag there.
It sucks. With the Delta variant having discouraged some people from venturing out in August, restaurants and bars cut 42,000 jobs. The first such monthly drop this year, hotels added only 7,000, the fewest since January. Well, restaurants and bars cut 42,000 jobs. That's really surprising to hear, and that's the opposite of everything I've seen.
Now, do you think that they cut those jobs because they can't fill those positions and they're just cutting back on hours?
It could be. I mean, they are cutting back in hours. A lot of these places.
A lot of them are closing early.
Yeah, because they have no choice.
Right.
It's either close early or almost literally kill the staff you have.
And I've noticed that some of the facilities are not open inside anymore. They have signs up saying, I'm sorry, you have to come through drive-through because we don't have enough staff to service you inside anymore.
Yeah, it's not about, we closed the lobby for the pandemic anymore.
No.
We closed the lobby because we don't want to wipe your table.
Exactly. Or I don't have anyone to serve you. I don't have anyone to take your order at the register.
It's like, yeah, we literally don't have anyone to stand at that register.
Exactly.
It's terrifying. Mm-hmm. Rising virus fear amid a renewed surge in COVID-19 infections will likely delay the return of some individuals to the workforce. I don't think that's a factor at all. I think some people might say it's a factor, but I think they're just looking for an excuse to not work. While we expect the labor market will continue to make some progress in coming months, it will likely take some time for these severe labor imbalances to get resolved. And again, being one of the people who works at one of these places, you don't have some time to resolve these things. These problems need to be solved ASAP or the economy's going under.
Well, the current employees can't take much more of this. They're going to work themselves to a point where, one, they're going to quit, or they're going to get so frustrated with some of the nasty customers that they're dealing with that they're going to have to be fired for the way that they act. And it's just going to be worse than it is now.
Yes, it's got to change soon, because if it doesn't, people are going to either collapse or quit, or, as you said, I don't think many people are going to get fired over customer service complaints lately, though. And that was what I told someone last night when she threatened to have me fired. I was like, lady, there's no chance you're getting me fired.
Good luck.
It's not going to happen.
I am one of the only ones that comes to work.
Yes. There are three people here tonight, and that's probably going to be true tomorrow as well.
And tomorrow's Thursday. I was thinking tomorrow's Friday.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's absolutely absurd what we're dealing with. And I don't have a solution because I don't even know what the problem is. I don't know why people don't want jobs. I don't know how people are able to sit at home and do nothing. I would go crazy just out of boredom. But what are people also doing for money?
That's my question. How do they live?
Yeah, how are they paying their bills? How are they paying their rent? The solution almost certainly has to be that they're living at home with their parents, but I don't know of anyone. I'm not saying it's not happening because my experience isn't universal, but I don't know of anyone who has moved back home during the pandemic.
Neither do I, but we know a lot of people who moved to New Hampshire where their parents don't live.
True. I'm told that this is happening all over the place, but I haven't seen it. Have you seen it? 603-283-6160. Hopefully someone out there comes up with something, though, because it's not looking good for the economy. It's Free Talk Live.
Do you feel like your country no longer holds your values? Have you dreamt of a place where liberty-minded people can come together and leave government overreach behind? There are many people just like you that are discovering FreePrivateCities.com. They start at FreePrivateCities.com and connect via the social media links shown there. All skills will be needed when the first of the Free Private Cities open. It's sooner than you think. Stop arguing and build FreePrivateCities.com. FreePrivateCities.com.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live. 603-283-6160. That's the call in line. You know, we sort of occasionally have our own staffing issues here at the show. I mean, only two hosts tonight because one person had other things to do, and ultimately, it's not that bad here, but when you look around the United States, I mean, just knowing that there are like 8.5, I don't remember the exact numbers now, but we were just talking about 8.5 million unemployed people.
And 11 million jobs.
Yeah. And it's just, why? That doesn't make any sense. Who are these people that don't have to work and how are they getting away with
it? Or people who say, I can't find a job.
Yeah, I don't understand, man. The economy is not in good shape, and it's not going to improve anytime soon. And as someone who works at one of these places, it's a matter of significant concern to me because it's stressful and it sucks. I mean, these jobs kind of sucked in the first place. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're fun if you like the people that you work with, because that's what happens in, you know, food places. If you develop camaraderie,
they become your friends.
Yes, and you're just all around weird, especially where we work at. And that's generally the case in food service. Mm-hmm. You have weird people, and you sort of create this weird family sort of thing, and that binds you together. But it still sucks as an actual job goes.
Yes.
And that's so much more the case when, you know, there's no staff to actually hang out with. But we have James from Michigan calling. He has a speculation on why this may be happening. James, you're on Free Talk Live.
So I would consider, obviously the unemployment benefits has something to do with it, but these people have been off of work so long, I speculate that a lot of them, at least I live in a lower income area, and they worked 2 and 3 jobs before, and now they've learned to live on one. And they're kind of enjoying their life a little more and saying, maybe I didn't need that extra money or that nicer car or that nicer apartment or whatever. And not to mention they weren't paying rent for how long.
That could be the case. None of the people that I worked with really, I think I'm the only one who has two jobs, and one of those is Free Talk Live, so it's not like physically demanding or anything like that. But I don't think any of the people that we lost were working two jobs. I was like, you know, I can cut one of these back and just not have that extra car or whatever. So I don't know how true that is. Maybe you have a good point for these rural places, because I did work two jobs back when I lived in mm-hmm. Mississippi, where you sort of had to do that sort of thing. But here in New Hampshire, that's not really the case. I don't think too many people are working more than one job. But New Hampshire has always had a pretty low unemployment rate, and it still does. I think it's like 2.4% or something like that.
I have no idea.
So any other thoughts about it, James?
I know where we live, it's a higher, naturally a higher unemployment rate. But even where I work is one of the better jobs in the area, and we're maybe of our new hires, we keep 50%. So, you know, on the other side of it, that's a good paying, good benefit job, and they're still walking out.
Yeah, I've seen that where I work as well. I wish our rate was 50%, but we hire someone, they work like two or three shifts, and then they're gone. And that's because they see how hard it is because we're working with basically no staff. And they're like, no, I don't want anything to do with this. And that just worsens the problem for the staff that's there.
Well, they've been sitting on their butts for so long that they don't want to put forth the effort that is needed to keep the job.
Absolutely. James, thank you so much for the call tonight. The economy's in bad shape, as we've been talking about, and that's true for the United States as well. According to Treasury Secretary Yellen, the U.S. is on track to default on the national debt in October. And this is not new. They default on the debt regularly. I don't even know why this is worth talking about.
What do you mean
point.
Default? They don't make the payments or they don't pay what they're supposed to?
I don't know the specifics of what happens when the U.S. government defaults on the debt.
Okay.
I know they usually just raise the debt ceiling, but maybe this article gets into it. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen on Wednesday warned congressional leaders that the U.S. is on track to default on the national debt in October if the White House and Congress are unable to raise the debt limit. So they're going to default and not be able to debt that they have if they're not allowed to take on more debt.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's obviously not a sustainable system, right? The only way you can pay the debt that you have, let's say you have $1,000 in debt. The only way you can pay that is to borrow $1,200. Then you're $1,200 in debt.
But you know what? You're going to pay that $1,000 and then you're going to be in debt to someone else.
Yeah. And that's because of interest, right? As long as there's interest in the system, the national debt can never be paid off.
Nope.
In a Wednesday letter, Yellen said that the Treasury Department would likely run out of cash and exhaust, quote, extraordinary measures to keep the federal government within its legal borrowing limit at some point next month. Once all available measures and cash on hand are fully exhausted, the United States of America would be unable to meet its obligations for the first time in our history. That's certifiably untrue. I do know that the U.S. has defaulted on the national debt on at least two occasions within the last several decades. I don't remember what the outcome on that was. I think they just raised the debt limit.
Or they printed more money.
Well, that's what it means when they default.
Which means they don't have enough money that they've printed?
That's
a question.
The U.S. government technically doesn't print the money. The Fed does.
Right.
And then they borrow it from the Fed.
Okay.
So the Fed can print the money, sure, but if the U.S. government's debt limit doesn't get raised, then the U.S. government can't borrow that money from the Fed.
I understand.
Given this uncertainty, the Treasury Department is not able to provide a specific estimate of how long the extraordinary measures will last. However, based on our best and most recent information, the most likely outcome is that cash and extraordinary measures, she keeps using those terms. I'm curious to know what she means by extraordinary measures, will be exhausted during the month of October. The Treasury Department has taken so-called extraordinary measures.
It just sounds important.
They do make it sound important. To prevent the U.S. from defaulting on the national debt since the federal debt limit was reimposed on August the 1st. I didn't even know it was ever, you know, not imposed.
I didn't either.
So there was a time there where the U.S. government could just borrow literally as much money as it wanted. I don't even know why they're playing this charade with the federal debt. Every time they do this where they're like, we're going to default if we don't raise the debt ceiling. Why even have the debt ceiling
just,
at this point?
Yes, they just said, let's raise it.
Yeah, just
how
get
much
rid
do
of
we
it.
Need?
If the Treasury Department runs out of ways to stave off a default without borrowing more money, it's so stupid. Why are people allowing this system? Get the hell out of it. Opt out of this insanity with Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency or gold or silver or anything but more U.S. dollars, because that's what they're saying here. We're not going to be able to pay off the money that we owe if we're not allowed to borrow more money.
It's going to take extraordinary measures.
Imagine living your life like that, where you have this massive, let's say you're at $200,000 in debt,
mm-hmm.
and you have no way of paying that off because you have no income, because the government has no source of income. The only way you can pay it off is to borrow $220,000. Then you've got $20,000 to pay with, play with or whatever. But sure, you have to pay that back, that $220,000 eventually. And you have to do it with interest. So you're probably going to be closer to $350,000 that you have to pay back. And how are you going to pay back that $350,000 when you've used $200,000 of that to pay off the debt that you already had? Well, the only solution is to borrow $500,000.
And somebody will give you that money.
Yes. And eventually you end up with a $23 trillion debt that you can't pay, and you're going, the only way we can pay this $23 trillion is to borrow $24 trillion. And the whole time, every single dollar that you have becomes worth less and less money for basic, obvious reasons. If you have only one of a thing in existence, then its value can't even be calculated. However, if you have two of those things, it probably has a very, extremely high value, but very low. But like sands on the beach, no one's going to pay a dollar for a grain of sand because there are just so many of them.
Yep.
They're basically infinite. The more of a thing there are, the less valuable that thing is. So the more dollars there are, the less value your dollar has.
People don't understand that. They have no idea that the dollar doesn't buy what it bought a year ago.
I was talking with someone at work about this recently, and I had them pull up the graph showing them that in 1913, $20 would bought you, $1 would buy you what $20 bought today.
Right. I remember whenever gas was like 97 cents a gallon, or you could get three candy bars for a dollar.
Yeah. And it's not just that, you know, you get fewer numbers of candy bars these days or fewer numbers of drinks. It's that the drinks and candy bars themselves have also gotten
smaller.
They
have, yes. The mini cans. Have you seen those?
Yes. And that's the price of what you would have paid for a 12-ounce can 5 years ago. And people aren't noticing this.
They don't get it.
603-283-6160. There is more coming up about the national debt. It's Free Talk Live. I don't know, man. I'm swimming in massive amounts of debt, and I think the only way out of this solution is for me to take on more debt so that I can pay the debt that I already have. And then, of course, a few years from now, deal with the problem of having even more debt and having no way of dealing with that than taking out even more debt.
You know what? This sounds oddly familiar.
It sounds like the U.S. government. I personally, actually, have zero debt. And that's the way I like to go. Actually, I do have a debt. I do have a car note. But that's literally just to build a credit history, right?
Yeah.
If I wanted to, I could easily pay the thing off because it's only like $800 owed on it or something like that. And it's like, yeah, but it's building my credit and that's worth it to me. But the United States government is losing credit. They were degraded from AAA to AA a number of years ago, I think, by Moody. And this was the last time this it wasn't the last time. It was the first time I remember this nonsense happening. I think it was around 2011 or 2010. But it happens regularly where the U.S. government is like, oh no, we have too much debt. We can't pay it off. The only thing we can do is borrow more money. And it seems obvious to any thinking rational adult that if you have too much debt, the solution to that is to pay it off and not take on more debt.
But there's some schmuck that's going to give them more money.
There is, and that schmuck is the Federal Reserve Bank.
Yes.
Waiting until the last minute to suspend or increase the debt limit can cause serious harm to business and consumer confidence, raise short-term borrowing costs for taxpayers, and negatively impact the credit rating of the United States, Yellen wrote. At a time when American families, communities, and businesses are still suffering from the effects of the government lockdowns, it would be particularly irresponsible to put the full faith and credit of the United States at risk. Now, to be fair, she said from the effects of the ongoing global pandemic, but I decided while reading that I'm going to auto-correct them every time I see someone blaming the economic crisis on the global pandemic. No, it was a result of government lockdowns that caused this. And even if there were people who would have, you know, quit their jobs and stayed home as a result of COVID-19. One, more than 50% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, so yep, could not have done that. Most of them already have too much debt. They learned that from the U.S. government, by the way. But so even if they were that afraid, they wouldn't have been able to stay home. However, if the media and governments hadn't conspired together to constantly hammer fear into people's lives through the television, that's the reason we're so different here at Free Talk Live. I don't think any of us watch television.
I don't even have a TV in my house.
I have a television, but I don't use it to watch television. I use it, it's a smart television, so I use it to watch like YouTube and crap like that. Yep. That isn't filled with advertisements from Nike about how we're going to get through this. We're all in this together.
Just do it.
Yeah, just do it. Just get the vaccine. We're not being bombarded with that nonsense constantly, so the fear doesn't affect us.
No.
But most people, I think the average American spends 40 hours per week watching television.
That's a lot of time.
It's 35 hours per week, actually. For children, it's 40 hours per week. So your average child spends a full-time job watching television each week.
Now, I can tell you that my child, my middle child, spent probably more hours than that playing games until he started school. Like, but it's not school, but it's like a homeschool.
Well, games aren't hammering fear into you either. There aren't any commercial breaks or anything like that. And I grew up playing games, and it worked out
just fine
for me. So, I mean, there's a lot of people like, oh, you shouldn't let your kids play games. Well, okay, but you're letting your kid watch television for 5 hours a day, so I don't know that, but I was also going outside and skateboarding and playing in the woods and stuff like that, and I'm sure your kids are as well.
Sometimes. My little one does. My middle one, not so much anymore.
So, I mean, there's no one-size-fits-all solution, but sure, video games still not filled with that level of fear-mongering.
No.
And the one time in the last several years that I turned on the television and actually watched what was on, both of those times were at Rogers Campground in New Hampshire. Actually, there was only the one instance. This last year, I just watch YouTube on my laptop to fall asleep because I don't want to listen to the fear-mongering. And the very first thing I noticed was the fear-mongering in the commercials. Car commercials, shoe commercials, wedding dress commercials, every single one of them made mention of COVID-19 and how we're all in this together and you got to wear a mask and all of this other nonsense. It's no wonder people who watch television are afraid.
They are really afraid, especially if they watch the local news.
Yeah.
It's even worse on that.
Or CNN is even worse.
Yeah.
I mean, our local news is like, oh God, we had two people die of COVID-19. I saw that in the Sentinel today. And I was just like, okay. I mean, that sucks. Two people died. Don't get me wrong. But really? We're doing all of this fear-mongering over a virus that has killed two people?
And they don't tell you what the pre-existing conditions or the conditions of those people were.
Yes, yeah,
I mean, those people could be obese. They could have heart problems. They could have, you know, all kinds of underlying issues.
Chances are they were certainly not young and healthy.
No, absolutely not.
But it doesn't matter. People see that like, oh God, two more people dead. I mean, the total number of people who have died from COVID-19 here in Cheshire County, at this point, I think it may be like 20.
I have no idea.
And this is a pandemic that's been going on for supposedly 18, 19 months, and it's supposedly this super deadly virus.
And I'm happy that I don't know because I don't follow it. I'm not afraid.
Yep. And it doesn't matter what you're watching. The commercials are filled with this nonsense. And if you're watching news, God help you, because the ticker that resulted from 9/11, the little scrolling text down at the bottom, when too much was happening for them to dedicate 5 minutes of the news channel to talk about, they invented the ticker. And it created this sense of urgency, this sense of panic in people, and it never went away.
No.
And now it's constantly just filled with COVID case reports and death reports and all of this other. It's just fear-mongering. So it's not the global pandemic didn't do any of this. Governments did. And if there hadn't been the fear-mongering surrounding COVID-19, the vast majority of us would not even know there was a pandemic.
Exactly.
I wouldn't have any idea that there was a global pandemic if I wasn't hearing about it from the media.
My family mentions it to me and I'm like, no, we're good. Nothing's going on.
Yeah, I don't know what people are talking about.
Right.
Sure, I got sick at some point earlier this year and I lost my sense of smell or taste. And that would include me in that something weird was going on. But then it came back, you know, and I was fine 24 hours later, other than the lack of sense of smell or taste, which stayed for like 7 weeks and was extremely annoying. I probably would have gone to a doctor if I hadn't known about COVID. I'm like, dude, I literally cannot smell or taste anything. It's not like I can barely taste it. It's complete and total. So I probably would have gone to the doctor over that. But as far as being aware of a pandemic, it's just, I don't see it. We fully expect Congress to act promptly to suspend the debt limit and protect the full faith and credit of the United States. And we expect them to do that in a not bipartisan way, just as they did three times during the prior administration. So apparently this happened where they raised the debt limit three times during the Trump administration and at least twice during the Obama administration and probably during the Bush administration as well. And now they just want to suspend the debt limit, which I think is probably the way to go. Stop increasing the debt ceiling. Just get rid of the debt limit. Stop pretending like you're limited in what you can spend. Stop pretending, please. Republicans are refusing to raise the debt ceiling, though, unless there are spending cuts and debt reduction programs attached. They're insignificant. It won't happen. What are your thoughts? Should they raise the debt ceiling? 603-283-6160.
When a lunar observatory detects a radio broadcast originating from Proxima Centauri, the nations of Earth discover their first contact with an alien race may also be their last. With the Proximans facing an extinction-level disaster, Earth must choose between sending a ship on a multi-year journey or allowing nature to take its course. Saving Proxima, a hard science fiction thriller by Travis S. Taylor and Les Johnson. From BaneBooks.com.
It's Free Talk Live, and we were the first major radio show to tell the world about Bitcoin. Did you end up buying any back then? Well, now it's 10 years later, and a new generation of crypto is hoping to change the world again. If you listened last year, you heard us talking about Intercoin. It's a new cryptocurrency to help unite local communities and businesses, make their community stronger, without having to rely on the state. Intercoin team members already built apps that have now reached 9 million users in dozens of countries around the world. Intercoin is launching worldwide. Anywhere you live, this is your chance to buy it using your favorite Ethereum wallet by going to exchanges like Uniswap. Using Intercoin, you can even launch your own cryptocurrency for your own members and customers under your own brand. If you want to learn more, just go to intercoin.org and follow the steps there to get some Intercoin for yourself. You can be part of the next generation of cryptocurrency, an ever-changing world. Head over to intercoin.org. That's intercoin.org. And let's go to the phones. We have Jill calling from Virginia. Jill, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah. The thing is, I'm thinking that one way they could get the people out of Afghanistan, even if they're trapped in the airport, is to send in helicopters. They can go up and down, and they can hover in one space. Of course, they won't hold as many people, but they're smaller. They could send in more helicopters than planes, and that would be one way to get them out.
Is the Taliban going? Would the Taliban allow the U.S. government to do that, or would they?
They'd have to send in a bunch of soldiers and Marines there to fight with them if they tried to interfere.
Yeah, see, I don't think that's a very good solution. That's just reigniting the war in Afghanistan, isn't it?
That would be a way to be loyal to our people and the people who helped us and at least save them.
Well, I would agree that the U.S. government should have been loyal to people it was sworn to be loyal to, and to people who helped them. But I don't want to see the war in Afghanistan reignited. And realistically, the fall of the Afghan government, as the United States had set it up, was inevitable as soon as the United States declared that it was going to complete its withdrawal. We all knew the Taliban was going to return. I don't know why anyone who was at risk of being hunted by the Taliban chose to remain behind.
They shouldn't have taken the military out first.
Why? It was 20 years and absolutely nothing had been accomplished.
They could have gotten the civilian people in there out and then had the military pull out.
Well, the civilian people had plenty of time to get out. They just didn't. I mean, they've been talking about this, I think it was in December of last year that Trump said he was going to withdraw all the troops from Afghanistan. Well, we knew the Taliban was going to return because the Taliban was never wiped out. They were just biding their time for the U.S. government to get out of their way. So they had the better part of 8 months in which to get out.
but the Afghans who helped us, they wouldn't have been able to get out, I believe, unless we helped them. And also our people, the ones that were taking care of things over there.
Well, the Afghan interpreters and stuff like that who helped out the U.S. government, they may or may not have been able to get a passport to leave the United States, but that's all the more reason to get rid of the immigration policies that are in place and to just let people come here if they want. It's probably very true that a lot of those people were not allowed whatever documentation they need, green cards or whatever, to gain access to the United States. But if we didn't have those systems in place and they could have just jumped on a plane and headed over here for the cost of a plane ticket, then a lot more people would have gotten out.
Well, you have to check people. That's what I think.
Why?
Good night.
The average. Well, thank you so much for the call tonight, Jill. I wish you would have hung on there for another minute because I'm curious.
I am oblivious as to what's going on. Can you fill me in real quick?
Well, the U.S. military finally withdrew completely
right.
from Afghanistan.
I knew that.
And the Taliban took over.
Okay.
As people expected. Now China is actually has military in one of the airports. I don't know exactly which one, or one of the air bases or whatever. I have an article about that somewhere on this 40,000 Chrome tabs that are open. But a lot of people who helped out the U.S. military and the U.S. government in general, interpreters, allies of the U.S. government, were left behind in Afghanistan.
Okay.
And now the Taliban, you know, is angry at those people.
Are they stuck in an airport?
They are stuck in Afghanistan.
Okay.
And the Taliban controls the airport.
Okay.
So they're not allowed to leave, presumably. I think the airport has actually been like destroyed to some degree or something like that. I don't know exactly what's been going on. I just know that some people remain stranded in Afghanistan who were loyal to the U.S. government and to the U.S. military.
And they are Afghanistan citizens? Like they are American citizens? Or
according to Jill and some other people, some of them are Americans. I don't know why any Americans would have gotten trapped there. It seemed to me like the Americans would have been the first to have gotten out.
Especially if they knew this was coming.
Yeah, and it was obvious this was coming because anyone who has followed Afghanistan over the last 20 years knew that the Taliban wasn't wiped out.
Right, and I know that they didn't just automatically one day say, oh, all the military, let's go. Everybody pick up your stuff. Let's leave. It had to be gradual.
No, it really wasn't, though. It was a panicked, hasty departure. They left something like 27,000 guns and all sorts of Humvees and helicopters and stuff behind. I mean,
wow.
It looked like the U.S. left in a panic.
Why do you think that was?
Because they were panicking. They made it clear that they were going to withdraw. They reduced the troop numbers and the Taliban was just taking over more and more cities. And
so they just wanted to get the heck out of Dodge before anybody got killed.
That seems to be the case.
Okay.
And as a result of that hasty departure, like, I made the joke at the time, like, how do you give weapons, massive amounts of weapons, to the Taliban right after September 11, 2001? The solution is a 20-year war. You don't sell it to them directly. You just invade them and you accomplish nothing for 20 years. And then you leave and you leave all of those cool toys behind. So not only was the war in Afghanistan tremendously unsuccessful for accomplishing nothing. Sure, there was a brief 20-year period where, you know, women were allowed to go to school and things like that. By the way, they're still being allowed to go to school and attend universities. There's a curtain separating them from the men, which, you know, that's pretty screwed up. But it's less screwed up than the old Taliban, which didn't allow women to have jobs or go to school in the first place. So the Taliban has gotten a little bit better. I'm not under their oppressive thumb, so I can say that. But for the women in Afghanistan, I have no doubt that it still sucks.
Do the community still function as normal? Are schools still in session? Or is everybody on lockdown and hiding?
The transition of power from the Afghan government that was allied to the U.S. to the Taliban was relatively orderly, at least in Kabul, which is the capital of Afghanistan.
Okay.
There was no fighting there. The U.S. government had gone, or they still had military at the airports or whatever while people were still evacuating, but the Afghan government didn't do anything. It stood down and it surrendered power. So it was peaceful there. There was fighting in other cities, but anyone who's been watching the training of the Afghan soldiers over the last 20 years knew that this was going to happen. Just look it up sometime. Afghan soldiers doing jumping jacks. It's a disgrace. They're they were not trained very well. But then you look at the Taliban, you see people who appear to be extremely well trained. It's like you're putting these two forces against each other. One obvious thing is going to happen. And the Taliban, the previous government in Afghanistan, is once again the only government in Afghanistan. So 20 years of war to replace the Taliban with more Taliban, with a better armed Taliban, because now they have modern U.S. military equipment. That was the grand result of this. It should have never happened in the first place. And none of these people should have ever been stranded in the first place, but a large part of that is because of not being able to get green cards and immigration passports and whatever other nonsense people need in order to come to the United States. You got to jump through all of these hoops, and it costs you $6,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, right. And a lot of these people just didn't have that. But on the other hand, they probably could have come up with $800 or $900, especially when airline industries are suffering as they are, to just grab a plane ticket to the U.S. And once they're here, hey, you're here. No more nonsense necessary. Immigration policy is the real cause of this tragedy. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. And if you value our show and what we're doing, you might consider joining the AMP program. You can find out more about it at amp.freetalklive.com. That's amp.freetalklive.com. $5 per month is all it takes to join, and it's used solely to advertise, market, and promote Free Talk Live. I want to say thank you to Jesse Cruz, who is tonight's amplifier, and to Keenan, who was last night's amplifier, but no one had access to that information because I had not created it yet because I was busy doing other stuff, unfortunately. So Jesse Cruz and Keenan, thank you so much for your contributions. We hope you continue amplifying the show. Look into it. It comes with a number of cool perks like an AMP-only Facebook group, and they created an AMP-only chat room on the Matrix server. But really, if you join, it should be because you value Free Talk Live and you want to help us reach a larger audience, because that's what the money is used for. That's amp.freetalklive.com. Speaking of what we do here on the show, let's keep going to the phones. We got Major Payne calling from Michigan. Major Payne, you're on Free Talk Live.
Good evening, Gary.
Hey, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I've been listening to your role, so I've decided to change the subject of my conversation here.
Okay.
And I'm going to go to Afghanistan.
Good luck. I hear it kind of sucks there right now.
Well, you guys are way misinformed about what's going on here. Trump had a deal cut with the Taliban over there. There was not one serviceman that was killed in the last 18 months of his tenure as president. And then when
I said
Biden
there was fighting,
there,
I should have been clearer. I think it was the fighting was between the Afghan military and the Taliban, not the U.S. military.
Yeah. But the thing is when Joe Biden got into the presidency, he decided he was going to dump and chump Trump. Everything he had done, he was going to try to undermine. And so what we had already had two giant military bases built there with massive airports, defensible positions, and Biden gave them both up along with all the military apparatus that went along with them, and decided he was going to try to evacuate everybody from a civilian airport in the middle of the capital city. Okay, now these people that are stranded are in the last refuge airport up in the north, where the holdouts were that the Taliban just defeated here in the last couple of days. We gave it up. We put them on a spit and poured barbecue sauce on them. This is horrible.
I didn't give up anything, and I have no responsibility for what the U.S. military and U.S. government have done in Afghanistan.
As far as the military and the U.S.
Well, the problem is still Trump's fault because he had...
We just got slapped with the leather glove.
I didn't get slapped.
Twice. You know what I'm saying.
No, it's important to make that distinction because I'm not responsible for the war in Afghanistan. I've opposed it since it started, as far as I remember. I was pretty young then, but I don't recall being pro-war at any point in my life. And
no, I didn't get slapped either, Area, but as a country, we got punked, and our own leadership did it to us.
They're not my leadership, man.
Mine either.
I didn't vote for that chump.
Well, I mean,
ain't no way in hell I'll ever vote for China Joe.
To be fair, I'm happy that Biden ended the war in Afghanistan. It should have been ended under Barack Obama. It should have been ended. It should have never started. But there
was the vice president under Barack Obama. He was all up in there.
I understand that. But all of these presidents had had opportunities to end the war in Afghanistan. You can say it's solely Joe Biden's fault. And, you know, sure, Joe Biden was the president who made those decisions. However, Trump was president for 4 years and could have made different decisions that could have sped up the withdrawal and chose not to.
I've called him before and we've talked about this. We dropped the Twin Towers. This is all a CIA operative thing.
I didn't drop the Twin Towers.
No, our government.
They're not my government.
They purport to be. The royal we, darling. You got to understand acronyms. All right.
I understand that, you know, you want to identify me with the American government, or you want to identify yourself with the American government and with the ideas of nationalism and maybe American pride or something like that. But I don't have any association with any of that. The U.S. government is them. It's not me. And it's not we. It's them. And they're horrifying warlords who are trying to take as much power as they can over anything and everyone.
And if you were in Afghanistan, you would not be able to exist as you stand today on the radio talking to me.
No, I leave places like that. That's why I came here from Mississippi, and that's why I would have fled to the United States from Afghanistan.
And there's people trying to do that now. And the last sanctions, there was a Northern Alliance. And that was the first one our government made a deal with. And they fell. And that's where our Americans now are standing with their claims. And it's horrible.
I mean, it is horrible. I will definitely give you that. But our government didn't do that. My government didn't do that. The U.S. government did that.
No, Joe Biden did that.
And he's the U.S. government.
And his overlords. He can't finish a sentence by himself.
But Trump didn't have overlords?
We are dealing with the New World Order. We are dealing with the New World Order.
Is your contention that Biden has puppet masters, but Trump didn't?
Yeah, I would say that would be a very accurate anachronism, I believe.
I'm pretty sure that Trump was dealing with the same puppet masters that Biden is.
Well, no, Trump was the only politician we've had in there that was not a career politician. He was not swamp saturated.
No, but he did nothing about
Clinton. These guys all spend they spend 40 years trying to crawl to the top of the ladder.
Hold on, you're incorrect there. He was absolutely swamp saturated. He's been dealing with politicians throughout his entire career, relying on the state to keep his businesses alive as he, you know, bankrupted people and bankrupted himself and defrauded people with Trump University and stuff like that. He's been swimming in the swamp his entire life. He may not have been one of the
Trump
lifeguards
University,
of the swamp
I
like
agree.
A politician.
Trump University was a stain upon him. And, he came from wealthy people. But,
sure. But he's been buddying up with politicians his entire life.
He didn't come from politics, dude.
But he did.
He didn't come from politics.
He was in the swamp
He had to play in the pool just to get his work done.
But he didn't play in the pool. He dove headfirst into the swamp. There's a huge difference.
And he did. And look what he did. He got gas down from $4 a gallon to $1.50.
I don't think
and
Trump
then
had
Joe
anything
come
to do
in
with that.
Shut it all down.
I don't think Trump had anything to do with that, Major Payne. And I think you're giving the president too much credit. A lot of these, I mean, Bill Clinton is also credited with, you know, the largest economic growth in history, but that happened as a result of the creation of the internet and it becoming more and more popular and more widespread. Bill Clinton couldn't have caused that or done anything to prevent it if he had wanted to. But thank you so much for the call tonight, Major Payne. We also have Bad Slave calling. Bad Slave, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hi, Arya. Thank you for taking my call. I have to agree with Major Payne a little bit. You and I are on the same page as Washington, D.C. being a crap hole and needs to end. Okay. Was there a California politician that said one of the few conservative ones that said that they want the federal government to be small enough to, drown in the bathtub. And that's what I agree with. But
I don't want it to exist at all. If it's going to exist, I don't want to be forced to swear fealty to it.
I'm on that same page. I haven't voted for a president since Nixon. I did vote for Nixon because I was not as informed as I am now. But I voted third party the whole time in the interim. And then I gave up politics altogether in 2004, got rid of my voter registration. But here's the deal with Trump. Trump was attacked almost on all sides, while he's trying to figure out a way to get out of Afghanistan. He was stopped by the the powers that be.
Best Slave, I'm sorry I have to cut you off. I mean, that's it for tonight's show. We're online in the meantime. You can find us at freetalklive.com. Whatever the case is, Trump was the commander-in-chief, ultimately in charge of the military. I don't think anyone could have stopped him if he had actually tried. But maybe I'm wrong. You can join me and chat more about this at social.freetalklive.com.
This message is for you if you are a polyamorous person or you're in an open relationship and you are struggling with jealousy, loneliness, and communication problems. Hello, my name is Jeremy West, and I am a polyamory coach with degrees in psychology and communications and 5 years of experience with polyamory. And for a limited time, I'm teaching a free online class just for polyamorous people or people in open relationships, where you will discover a new, simpler, and unique way to uncover the secret that experienced poly people know about jealousy that you must know too, stop feeling lonely when your partner is out with another partner, and use the 4 key elements that will change the way you communicate forever. No more crying yourself to sleep when you're alone for a night, a weekend, or longer, and wondering if it's better to go back to a monogamous relationship. Sound good? Well then, go to jeremywest.net/free class and register for my class now. Again, that's jeremywest.net/free class, jeremywest.net/free class.